You're listening to the Eagles Insider Podcast. Now here's your host, Chris McPherson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Eagles Insider Podcast. I'm joined alongside, as always, the illustrious Fran Duffy, who is dabbing.
Oh, just dabbed.
I don't know why he's dabbing. Chris Stevens, our producer, is losing.
He's gone.
At the mere sight of Fran Duffy dabbing.
Frank Beamer did it. Urban Meyer did it.
Oh, jeez. But what do you have to celebrate?
It was a two-day weekend.
We have a lot to be thankful for, but...
That's true. We have a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Come back. We have you guys. It's great. Alex Smith is here.
Alex, I don't know how you follow that one up.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I can't follow up the dab. That was unbelievable. A great way to start the show.
It's not video, so I can get away
with
it.
That's a problem. Yeah, it is an absolute problem. It's a blessing.
You got to be thankful for that it's not video.
Yes.
We might have to Snapchat that.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
It's not going to happen again, so it's going to be tough to snap.
Sure.
Cam Newton said that if teams didn't want him to dance in the end zone, that they shouldn't let him score. So how are we going to stop you from dabbing?
Keep me off the podcast?
Yeah, exactly. Also joining Chris Stevens behind the scenes, you just heard Brian Thomas, BT. Thank you very much, as always. So we're not going to lament too much about what happened on Thanksgiving. Fortunately, we're just going to move on. A big game ahead this weekend against the New England Patriots. I'm not even going to delve so much into the whole NFC East picture that the Eagles are still just one game out of first place. The Eagles just need to take care of their own business at this point and try to rectify what's happened in the last three games. So on today's podcast, we're going to offer our three and out looking ahead. I'm going to take a big picture approach, but we're also going to look ahead to Sunday's matchup with New England. Alex, what do you have in store for game time this week?
I have some trivia in store to see how well you guys know your famous Pats. So get ready for that.
Hoping
favorite Pat?
Pats, P-A-T-S.
Oh, okay, nice.
Pats. I'll stand by you. The name of the game is Standing Pat.
Standing Pat, okay.
That's where the sound drop comes from, which I did not choose.
Oh, Lord.
I was surprised you didn't go with a track from Pat Benatar.
We'll get there later in the game, but Pat Benatar did not make the list.
All right.
Was on the list and got cut.
Got axed, huh?
Got cut, yes.
I'm going to show my lack of knowledge. I thought that was Pat Benatar right there.
Oh, there you go.
So.
Who is that, BT? Who sings that song?
I think that was AC/DC.
The Pretenders?
The Pretenders. I'll stand by you.
I was kidding by AC/DC.
I would have said AC/DC.
I thought the reason he played it was
C-Mac, we're here.
Yeah, there you go.
If it was Motown, I'd be all on it.
All right. So enemy intel. Fran Duffy's looked at the tape and will explain how the Eagles can beat the 10-1 New England Patriots. It's unfortunate that they're not undefeated anymore.
Correct. We would have rather seen them when they were 11-0.
And then there was one.
That's right. Carolina.
And your questions on mailing it in to round out the podcast. But
does Chris Stevens look like a genius with this whole Cam Newton thing now?
No.
Okay. I think it would take a lot for him to look like a genius. Oh, we're getting off track
all right,
earlier.
On to the show.
I thought this was the Eagles' entire podcast.
We're getting off track here.
Nonetheless, it's time for three and out.
One, two, three.
Three is a magic number.
Three, three.
Now it's time for three and out.
Unfortunately, the Eagles are also on a three-game losing streak. So hopefully that'll be something that'll be rectified this Sunday.
No.
So to start things on three and out here, I'm going to take the big picture approach. And I think the biggest question for me facing this team down the stretch in the final five games of the regular season is how will they deal with adversity? Because quite honestly, this is the first true time that you can say Chip Kelly has dealt with this in his head coaching career. You look back to his teams at Oregon, they were all wildly successful, won 10 or more games each of his four seasons there. The only big question I remember him having was the very first game, his head coaching debut against Boise State, when LeGarrette Blount punched the player at the end of the game. You know, how did he handle that? That was kind of like the big thing that he had to face right off the bat, and he handled that with aplomb and was able to guide the Ducks to success. He came to Philadelphia, and there was the Riley Cooper incident in 2013, and he relied on the leaders in the locker room to kind of help guide the team through that period of time. They were able to rebound from that. Sure, he got off to a 1-3 start as a coach, so he had the three-game losing streak after winning that game on the road Monday Night Football at Washington to open his NFL head coaching career. But the Eagles, you know, were able to bounce back, and they won seven of their final eight games in 2013. They really didn't face any adversity last year until it was really too late. They started off 9-3 after that Thanksgiving Day win over the Cowboys a year ago. So this is the first time where it's like, look, it's a period of time where this team can go in one of either directions here, where they're 4-7. Yes, they still are technically in the hunt for the NFC East division, but you just want to see this team fight down the stretch and play with pride and passion more than anything else. And there's all this talk about how Chip brings in these high character guys. He brings in the guys who have good culture. It's time for them to show that. It's time for them to take charge and show that they're not going to be pleased or not accept the results that they've put out in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I remember we talked last week, and it was after the loss against Tampa Bay, and we talked about, okay, it's a short week going into Detroit. How is this locker room going to respond? And obviously, it did not go well.
Exactly.
So now we have the opposite. So now we've got a long break. Now that the players were able to get away for a couple of days, enjoy the holiday, the coaches were able to get away a little bit, spend some time at home with the family, can everybody get their mind right? Now let's get focused back and see if we can turn this around. You know, I know fans don't necessarily want to hear about it. Still, only mathematically, very much still involved here in this playoff race. Can they do what needs to happen, you know, to try and get things fixed and get things turned around here? That's going to be the big thing. And this is where it comes in, where you see how can they handle adversity? It's not even just Chip. It's all these players, too. You know, you look at Sam Bradford, you know, how can he, coming back from injury, how can he lead this team to an area where a lot of people hope that he would have been able to do coming here to Philadelphia? So it should be an interesting few 5 weeks here.
Yeah, just going back to the talking about the short week really quick. You know, a lot of the coaches and a lot of the players said that it was a good thing for the Eagles to have that short week after the game because they didn't have time to think about it. They had to turn their attention ahead to Detroit. And I think that mentally it was a good thing. But physically, when you're trying to, you know, you're trying to correct so many mistakes, you're trying to, you know, get healthy and regroup for a football game, you know, 2 or 3 days to prepare for the game physically, it's got to be really, really taxing. So I think mentally it may have been a good thing that they had that short week. But now that they have, you know, 10 days in between games, hopefully we see guys like Sam Bradford, like you mentioned, we see guys like him start to get healthier, and we'll see what they can do against the Patriots.
For my estimation, I just feel like that everyone's going to be looking at the defense and how much they've struggled in the last couple of games, giving up 45 points in back-to-back weeks. I partially think that it's going to be huge to get Sam Bradford back, and we're recording this section on Monday, and I know it's still up in the air whether he'll be back or not for the game. But if Sam Bradford returns, I think it'll just make such a big difference from a confidence boost for the defense, because I truly believe that the last couple of weeks the defense, you know, saw the offense struggling and probably figured they had to play a virtually perfect game and just were not able to play up to the level that they had to. I think it'll be huge if they can get Bradford back this week just to give this offense a little bit of a jolt and to give the defense, I think, a little more footing that they don't feel like they have to carry the team.
Yeah, and the defense is exactly what I wanted to talk about this week. And a lot of people are saying, what's gone wrong with the defense? What's happened? You don't want to put too much on a rookie like Jordan Hicks and say, oh, Jordan Hicks was the reason that this defense was thriving. You know, the middle of that defense, the inside linebacker position, I think that's such a crucial role on this team in this 3-4 defense. And, you know, we're seeing Kiko Alonso out there. Is he 100% healthy? He says that he is, but, you know, it's still taking him a little bit of time to, first of all, get back into the game and then to learn things with a new team here in his first year in Philadelphia. Michael Kendricks has been a little bit banged up this year. Same can be said for D'Amico Ryan. So that position, I think there's been a lot of instability there. And I think that's kind of led to, you know, a little bit of some of the struggles here with this defense. But the other thing with the defense is, where have the turnovers gone? And if you looked at it a few weeks ago, I think the Eagles led the league 3 weeks ago. They're still tied, or they're fourth in the NFL right now with 21. But I think they had 21, what, three or four? I don't think, what have they gone, 3 games without a turnover?
Well, the offense got the last turnover. That was against Tampa.
Yeah, the fumble recovery on the opening draft.
Miami, there was the safety, but that's not a turnover.
It's not a turnover.
Tampa was the one that the offense got back on the very first drive of the game.
Oh, that one. Yeah. I forget about that
and
one.
And Detroit, no turnover. So the defense has not generated a turnover in 3 games.
At one point, they were averaging, you know, 2.7 turnovers per game, and that's kind of disappeared. And you know, is that all connected to the lack of pass rush up front? And it's, you know, I think there are a lot of questions to be answered, and now it's a tough task to try to put things together this week against the New England Patriots. Obviously, the Pats are down some players. It looks like Gronk is going to be out. I think the last report I saw is that he's going to miss at least a couple of weeks. It's a week-to-week thing with Gronk, so, you know, we'll see what happens there. But obviously, a really tough opponent for the Eagles to look to get back on track this week. But, you know, some guys, especially in the secondary for the Eagles, are going to have to step up with Nolan Carroll going down last week against Detroit.
Yeah, and one of those guys is Eric Rowe. And that's who I wanted to talk about. And so there was a good segue there, Alex. I mean, look, We all were very excited to see Eric Rowe in his first extensive action of the season. We saw a little bit of a tease against the Jets. He saw some playing time defensively, came up with the interception in the red zone. A lot of us were very excited to continue to watch him, and we really haven't seen much of him since that game in week three. And with Carroll going down, we got to see a lot of him. And I think we're going to see a lot of him moving forward. I'm excited to see that because it was a guy that we were all excited about. We all kind of imagined that at this point in the year, if you had asked us all back in the spring, we would have said, oh, by week 13, Eric Rowe will be the starter at right corner. And now we're going to be able to see that. Is he a full-time corner? Look, some of the media have questioned already and have made sweeping judgments that based off of one game that Eric Rowe is not an NFL corner. And I will strongly disagree with that.
Oh, Fran's heating up here.
Strongly. And to me, look, he might be a safety down the road. Might be. That might be the case. But if you look at this game, I thought that he was really competitive throughout the entire game. I thought that on some of the catches he gave up down the field, he was in pretty good position to defend the ball. The second touchdown he gave up to Calvin Johnson, the one that was the 18-yarder. Unbelievable throw and catch. Unbelievable throw and catch. A lot of people also have questioned, oh, well, how come they were putting him in one-on-one, you know, with no safety help over the top? There was only one time when there wasn't safety help over the top, and it was an incompletion. It was slightly overthrown by Stafford, and Rowe was in good position to defend the pass. A lot of the other times, there was Walter Thurman was shaded over to that side, but for one reason or another, got pulled away. It might have been a route that was going his direction. There may have been on the one pass that Rowe actually broke up in the end zone. It was two plays before that touchdown that I alluded to earlier. The tight end was down the seam because he shook Malcolm Jenkins in the line of scrimmage, and Thurman saw the tight end down the seam, felt the need to go there. That was the most dangerous threat in the middle of the field. Stafford had his eyes there. And then he went outside to Calvin Johnson. You know, Phil Davis did a good job, I think, of trying to get help to Eric Rowe. It may not have been obvious watching the tape or watching TV, but when you go back and you look at the tape, you can see, oh, hey, look, they're playing, you know, with a two shell here with safety over the top. It just happened that sometimes, you know, it just didn't seem that way. For one reason or another, that safety got pulled away on a number of those different occasions. But again, and it's some of the things we've talked about in the past, when you do double cover someone and when you do play with a too high shell, you have to win your one-on-ones elsewhere. And there were a lot of times where, whether it was Theo Riddick, whether it was Golden Tate, scrambles by Matthew Stafford. Again, you touched on the four-man rush not being able to get home. The Eagles have not been able to get a consistent four-man rush over the last couple games, and I think that goes hand-in-hand with turnover issue. But overall, I think when you look at Eric Rowe, where he is right now, I'm excited to see how he performs over the final 5 weeks of the season and hopefully into the playoffs. You get an idea of, is he a future corner? I think that right now, judging off this past week, I think he is. So I'm excited to see.
The Eagles defense was having so many problems across the board.
No question.
From a defense standpoint, you mentioned Theo Riddick.
Yep.
You know, the linebackers had trouble with him. Golden Tate was causing problems. It was watching the Lions offense, I was kind of like, that's what I envisioned the Eagles offense looking like.
Sure.
You know, you have a big dominant receiver in Calvin Johnson, your space weapon in Theo Riddick. Obviously, their ground game leaves a little bit to be desired, but nonetheless, Stafford was just slinging the rock all over the place and was on point throughout the course of the game.
No question.
All right, so that's going to do it for us in our three and out segment. It's now time for the interview.
And now it's time for what you've all been waiting for, the interview.
So our special guests on this week's edition of the Eagles Insider Podcast, none other than second-year tight end Trey Burton. And Trey, welcome first and foremost to the podcast. I'm going to show you a video on my phone right now. You're probably wondering why I'm downloading and checking stuff out, but it's actually the all 22 of your first career reception.
Okay.
So would you mind, I'm going to hand it over to you, if you just want to click on it, press the play button. Can you kind of take me through?
Gotcha.
How everything went down?
Yeah, so we knew going into the game that the linebackers would bite heavy on the play fake. So we had a good play fake by Mark and DeMarco, and I saw the backers split and come down the hill, went underneath the first one, over top the second one, and as soon as I turned my head around, Mark had the ball already out of his hand and basically just hit me in stride and went up the field. I saw Miles Austin blocking for me on the corner, and thought I was going to be able to score. Saw somebody come to the from the right of me, and just stopped, let him run in front of me, and then tried to get in the end zone, but I wasn't able to.
You got to the five. I was wondering,
close.
Did you think, like, I should have scored, man?
Yeah, right? I mean, obviously, yeah, going back and thinking about it, I wish I would have, and always think about things that I could have done, you know, better next time if I'm ever in that situation again.
I was surprised that was your first career reception after everything you did on the field for the team last season. I actually felt it was intriguing that you scored a touchdown last season.
Mm-hmm.
It was on special teams. Yep. You had a blocked punt return in the season finale against the Giants. I just found it intriguing the fact you scored a touchdown as an off and you were an offensive player.
Yep.
Before you ever made your first career reception.
Yeah.
I don't know how many players have done that in history, but I just found it one of those things that's like stats info type things, like how many players in NFL history will have done that before. But you've had a nose for the end zone throughout your entire life. Mm-hmm. In fact, you had, was it 6 touchdowns in a game at the University of Florida? It was against Kentucky in 2000.
My freshman year, yeah. Five rushing and one receiving.
So can you explain what that game was like?
It was wild. It was our first home SEC game of the year. Going into the season, it was Urban's last year at Florida. But, he just put me in great positions to score. They were all my rushing touchdowns were out of the Wildcat. And then my receiving touchdown was close, I think, five to six-yard line. He just basically called my number every single time. And I think I had 5 rushes and 5 touchdowns and 2 receptions with a touchdown. So it was a good night.
So what were all the positions that you played at Florida?
I've played every offensive position except for O-line.
Obviously. I didn't think O-line in there.
No.
So when you came out in the NFL draft, were you thinking to yourself, man, teams are going to look at me and not know what to do with me? Did that thought cross your mind, or did you say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to find a home no matter what the team, the scheme, whatever's asked of me, I'll figure out a way to make it?
It was definitely interesting. The second part of your question, yeah, I knew I was just going to try to figure out a way to make it. And then to answer the first part, when I was interviewing agents and trying to figure out who I wanted to go with to represent my family and I, the guy that I ended up going with, one of the best in the business, he straight up told me, he was like, it's going to hurt you that you don't have a position, but our goal isn't to get in the NFL, get drafted and only play a couple of years. Our goal is to be in the NFL for a long time. And he said, where it's going to hurt you in the draft, it's going to help you, you know, for your career. And that's something that we truly believed in. And I was extremely frustrated for the majority of the draft process, and because knowing that I wasn't probably going to get drafted, and then draft day, you know, seeing all these people go by me who I felt personally, you know, I had played better in college then. But I mean, it all worked out in the end, and I'm extremely happy to be here.
How much did it help the fact that you were told up front that you were probably not going to be a high draft pick?
I don't know if it helped, because, you know, the stubbornness in me, you know, was like, nah, man, I'm not gonna listen to you, even though you know better than I do, even though you've been doing this for years. You know, I still think I'm gonna get drafted, and that's obviously everybody's goal coming out of college, is to get drafted. One of my athletic dreams, you know, that one of the goals that I wanted to have coming out of college.
So why did you select the Philadelphia Eagles after the draft?
I mean, for a lot of reasons. I think probably the biggest reason was I've always been a big fan of Coach Kelly ever since, you know, he was at Oregon and I was in high school watching him and watching the way that they do things. Didn't really get to catch too many games because they're on the West Coast and I'm on the East Coast and all that. But the games I did get to watch, and just seeing how his teams played, and they're always in the big game, and his offense always intrigued me. And I figured that I'm not the typical offensive player, tight end, running back, wide receiver, whatever you want to call me. But he doesn't run a typical NFL offense. So I figured that I would have the best fit here. And I actually really didn't even look, my wife and I, after we got all the calls from the teams that were interested, we went away from our family because we were at a family reunion, and kind of like a family reunion draft party deal. And we went away and prayed about it, and we just felt like, you know, Philly would be the best choice. We didn't even look at the roster. We didn't, you know, none of that. We just felt like Philly would be the place to be for us. And obviously there's 3 guys here last year that were at the tight end position, and I ended up being the 4th guy. So maybe if we would have looked at the roster, we might have been scared away a little bit. But, in all honesty, we didn't even look.
When did you think, Trey, that you would make the 53-man roster as a rookie free agent?
I don't know. Being the competitor in me, I would like to say I always knew that I would get a shot somewhere. But I don't think anybody as a free agent really knows, especially being a rookie and not knowing how the NFL goes. I don't think anybody really knows that they're going to make the team until you get that phone call on final cut day saying that, hey, you're going to be on the team, or we're excited to have you.
So you're a huge part of the prolific special teams a year ago. Mm-hmm. How different was going into your second season, having that experience under your belt? Did you still have that approach of a rookie free agent where, man, I don't know if I'm going to make this team, or did you have a greater sense of confidence because you knew the offense and you knew what it took to make it in the NFL?
I think it's a little bit of a mixture of both. I had a lot of confidence going into this season, especially like you were saying, having a great great year last year on special teams. But then I also, you know, always, I don't want to be comfortable. I don't want to get comfortable. I always want to find things in my game that I can work on. And I mean, to be honest, I was telling myself all training camp, I'm going to get cut. And just having that mindset and you know, always wanting to put my best foot forward whenever I get the opportunity, you know, helped me make it to where I am now.
There have been critics who have said that the Eagles offense has not really adjusted, not really changed throughout the course of the year. But I think seeing you in action against Detroit highlighted some of the way that the offense has changed, where there hasn't really been much of a fullback in the past, mm-hmm. but you were utilized in that role mm-hmm. in the game against Detroit. It's almost like the versatility that you brought to the table came in handy because the Eagles were able to utilize you in a number of ways against the Lions.
Yeah, I mean, we go in every week with new stuff in the game plan, just depending on what the other team has shown. I mean, you can't run the same stuff against every team. Some teams are really strong in the run game, you know, so you know that week you're probably not going to be running the same old run schemes that everybody else. You're going to try to mix it up on them. And so, yeah, I don't know really too much about – I don't really listen to too much what other people on the outside say, but I know what we do here, and it's we definitely do change things up.
So you're not the only member of your family – who has been in the NFL.
Correct.
Your brother Clay.
Yep, and my grandfather.
Your grandfather. I did not know that, though.
Yeah, he ran in the 72 Olympics, and really? He played, I want to say, six or eight years in the league.
Really?
For New Orleans and San Diego.
Impressive. Yep. And then your brother was with the Buffalo Bills.
Yep.
And is he? Where is he right now? Is he trying to work his way back in, or is he at the point where, you know, if I get a call, great, but if not, I'm ready to move on?
Yeah, he's definitely trying. He said he was going to take 1 year, which is basically now, and okay. You know, continue to work out, continue to train. I don't know if you've heard much about it, but there's a new league starting up. I don't know exactly what the name of the league is.
I've not heard about it. Okay.
But there's 10 or 12 teams, and they just had a tryout right before Thanksgiving down in Florida. It's actually based out of Bradenton, Florida, IMG Academy, if you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. And so he did that, and they don't know. I don't think they'll figure out if they've made a team or not until the last week of December or the first week of January. But it's a spring league, and so he's going to be involved with that, and we'll see where that takes him. The problem with him is that he didn't have any tape. He wasn't able to play in any games. He got injured before the Bills played their first preseason game, and they kept him. He was an undrafted free agent. They kept him on the roster for 2 more weeks after that. And still wasn't able to get rid of that injury, and so he wasn't able to play games, so didn't have any tape.
Next week, I know obviously you guys are getting ready for the Patriots and you're focusing on that, but next week are you going to be giving your brother a call and being like, all right, what do I need to know about Rex Ryan and this Bills defense?
No, honestly, I haven't even looked past New England. I didn't even know we played them, but no, I mean, I might give him a call or, you know, hit him up or say something to him.
Got to get the scouting report.
Yeah,
you
something,
know?
Bro. Let me get something.
Your grandfather, now, is he still alive or did he pass away?
No, he's still alive.
Still alive. Mm-hmm. So have you been able to lean on him for advice? Did you chat with him going through, you know, college and the draft process of what to expect and what's going to take to make it in the NFL?
Yeah, but everything was a lot different back then. You know, the games changed.
Of course.
Draft process, the scouting, all that stuff has changed, you know, tremendously. But yeah, he definitely has always been there for any questions that I may need. He was actually at the Thanksgiving game. I mean, the Dallas game.
Okay.
We played them at Dallas, so he got to come to a game this year. But yeah, whenever, if I need anything, I can definitely lean on him.
So what position did he play?
He played wide receiver.
So it's a, you know, similar type situation. So obviously a lot of similarities there. It's not like he played defense and you guys are going in two different directions.
Correct,
there.
Yeah.
One of the things, Trey, has impressed me quite a lot about you is a lot of guys come into the league and, you know, they're young, they're, you know, they're maybe in a new city for the first time and they're just trying to get acclimated with the NFL life, but you're already married, you already had, you know, kids, you have two kids mm-hmm. now. In fact, where does that maturity come from?
I think it, I mean, in all honesty, I think it came from my upbringing. I grew up without a father. my mom was always working, you know, and I had to be there for my two youngest brothers. I have my brother that played for Buffalo, and then I have one who actually lives with me now up here in Philly, and actually in New Jersey. But yeah, so I had to. It came from that, you know, and having to be a positive influence for them, you know, a fatherly influence for them. And so that's where I think, you know, the majority. And then also going into high school and being a leader, I was forced into the leadership role on my high school football team and basketball team. And my coaches did an unbelievable job, you know, not letting me take the shortcuts, not letting me take the easy way out, you know, and always keep me accountable and not letting me slide one bit.
How important is that leadership quality now with the team 4-7, losers of three straight games? You know, you guys really have to, you know, pull deep here to be able to persevere and turn things around here. How important is it to have those leadership qualities in the locker room?
I think it's extremely important. I think, you know, what's more important than being a leader is being a good follower. You know, you don't want to have too many leaders. You don't want to have too many guys that think they know what they're doing, and that's where people start butting heads, and that's where you have division, you know. So I think in order to be a good leader, you have to be a good follower first, and that's really, you know, what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be a good follower of Celek, because he's obviously the leader of the tight end group, and then ultimately a good follower of Sam or Mark, whoever, you know, the starting quarterback is. And that's really my main focus right now.
Are you inspired to be the dad that you are because of the fact that you didn't have one in your life growing
100%,
up?
100%, yeah, definitely. I don't want my children to have to grow up the same way I did, go through some of the things that I had to go through. And I've always had a huge heart for kids, you know, and so does my wife. My wife has a huge heart for kids, and that's why, you know, we have the two that we have early, and that's why we love them, you know, unconditionally.
I was reading a profile about you. It was on Birds 24/7. Phenomenal job done there. And it was interesting to read that if you go back to your high school, the quarterback there, where's your number? Because he admires you so much.
Yeah.
How fascinating is that, that, you know, you're 24 years old and you already have, you know, that kind of legacy that you've already put out there?
It's special. And, you know, that's what people don't understand. I mean, we're all still human, you know, regardless of, you know, DeMarco Murray, he's my locker mate, but he's still a human. You know, he's an unbelievable person. You know, I've got to know him really well these past few weeks, but he's still a human. You know, we're going to make mistakes, but the coolest thing, you know, about that is, you know, like I said, I'm still human, but I'm always trying to put my best foot forward, you know, and these guys from back home, I want to let them know and want them to see that even though we're from a really, really small town in Florida that 99% of America has never heard of, just because you're from a small town, just because all the odds are against you, you know, you still have a chance. You can still do whatever you want to do in life, but it's going to take a lot of hard work, you know, and that's the biggest thing that I want these kids back home to understand. And that's why I go home every chance I get. That's why I go to a high school game every year on my bye week. You know, that's why I'm always trying to be around my community just to show them and give people hope that, you know, that even though the odds are against you, you still have a chance.
What is DeMarco like as a locker mate?
Man, he's funny. He's a really good guy.
Like, yeah.
I'm really thankful and appreciative that I'm able to be a locker mate with him. He's just a great guy. He's a really good pro. He's taught me a lot, you know, about the game and on and off the field, because he does a ton of stuff off the field. And I'm just happy to be next to him.
Trey, last question for you. Give us a scouting report of the New England Patriots defense, and what do you guys have to do to come out with the win?
Man, they're good. They're really, really good. Have a ton of athletes, a ton of guys that they're a lot bigger at every position than normal NFL teams are. You could say they're a lot more physical too, you know, than normal NFL teams are at every position. But I mean, in all honesty, we've beat ourselves in every game we've played so far. We've done a lot of things uncharacteristic, a lot of things that we haven't done in practice, you know, or we're doing on Sundays. And if we can just get out of our own way, you know, it will give us that much more of a shot than we've had these last couple of weeks.
Trey, I hope that when you catch the ball this Sunday, we'll get in the end zone.
Thank you.
Instead of getting 5 yards short. Trey Burton, our special guest on this week's edition of the Eagles Insider Podcast.
Time to get ready for game day. It's time for Enemy Intel.
All right, it is now time for the most informative segment of the Eagles Insider Podcast. Fran Duffy, we're talking X's and O's here. Let's talk about the Patriots. At once an undefeated team, They go down against Denver last week, but let's kind of dig into the X's and O's here. The big story, obviously, Rob Gronkowski. If he doesn't play, and a lot of different reports are saying different things, but most likely he doesn't play on Sunday, how does that change their offense? What can they do with Scott Chandler?
Well, here's the thing that I was most interested in when I went back and watched the tape just from Sunday was how they were playing offense before Gronkowski was, you know, got hurt and then afterwards. Now, he didn't get hurt until the, you know, very, very late in the game. So got to see most of what the offense looked like with Gronk. And I'm going to be honest, they moved Chandler all over the place. They're a Big 12 personnel team with two tight ends. They put him out wide as an ISO receiver. They put him in the backfield. They line him up in line. They line him up as a wing. Every imaginable place that you could imagine a tight end moving, they put Scott Chandler in those situations, and they threw – I mean, I didn't chart it yet. I'm going to do it for when I do my preview of the Patriots this week, because they threw – I want to say Tom Brady threw 7 or 8 vertical passes to Scott Chandler while Gronk was still in the game. So he was very much a featured part of that offense before Gronk got hurt. I would imagine that he will be a featured part of the offense moving forward. Remember, Chandler was a pretty, you know, a solid player for Buffalo before right. He arrived in New England, and they are so good at trying to take advantage of player strengths and you know, and trying to hide their weaknesses. And they're doing a lot of different things with Chandler. They move him all over the formation, like I said. They're willing to take vertical shots with him. I would imagine that would continue. And then they just do such a good job of just finding ways to create one-on-one favorable matchups with their other guys across the formation, whether it's Brandon Bolden in the passing game, which he was very involved on Sunday night. James White, they try and mix in. Brandon LaFell, they try and create opportunities down the field and on short passes, those drive short crossers, to try and get the ball in his hands and create opportunities after the catch. So they do a really good job of trying to create one-on-ones for all their guys across the formation. I would expect that to continue on Sunday.
And you mentioned how much 12 personnel they like to play, and we've heard Eagles coaches kind of talk about how this offense could be modeled after that one, where they work the inside of the field. Their outside receivers over the years, they haven't had too many big names. Obviously, they had Randy Moss, you know, a few years ago. Edelman can kind of work inside and outside. LaFell's an outside target. But they really, it seems like their offense is built over the middle of the field. And are there that many teams in the NFL who've shaped their offense that way?
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to look and see what the list is of all the offenses in the league and see who really shapes their offense that way, but that is definitely how this one plays. You know, you look at whether it's Amendola or Julian Edelman, and obviously when both are healthy, one is outside and one's inside, but just depending on the play call, they just find different ways, and there's so many different concepts. And Bill Davis talked about it in his press conference on Tuesday, was that you have an offensive scheme that one game they will come out and they will do one thing, and then the next week it will be something completely different. And you always hear the story of Bill Belichick coming in on Monday morning with new players and ripping up the playbook from the previous week and saying, that doesn't matter. What we did last week doesn't matter. What we're doing this week against this opponent is what matters, and we're going to try and find ways to attack this opponent. So sometimes you'll see these guys play heavy 22 personnel, 23 personnel, heavy packages for a majority of the game and try and run the ball. And then other times you're going to see them run empty with, you know, spread formations and personnel groupings to try and spread defenses out. That's their MO, is that they want to do whatever it takes to try and win the football game. And when you have Bill Belichick trying really just as the mastermind of it, and then Tom Brady steering the ship as the executioner on offense, you're able to make it happen.
A good football team. We just got to do everything better. Yeah. Better block them better, throw, catch, get the ball out on time.
Take it 1 week at a time. Get ready for next week.
He's ridiculous. I mean, it
it's a simple approach, but it works.
I wish that, you know, it's great when you when you've got 12 games of tape to look at this team, because it's you know, for my sake, I love just going back and watching them. The problem is that there's so many games, and I have so little time to go through it, that I always feel like I'm missing something. Like, I just want to keep watching, because it's so interesting to watch and see how they're able to construct game plans week in and week out and do things differently and attack teams in so many different ways.
You mentioned Tom Brady, and you can't talk about the Patriots without talking about number 12. Obviously one of the best quarterbacks to ever play, but he gets the ball out so quick, and the Eagles just had trouble against Matthew Stafford when he was getting the ball out quick. How do the Eagles get pressure on Tom Brady this week?
Well, you have to win your one-on-ones, and that's what it's going to come down to, is because this is, I think that's an area where you can attack the Patriots, is on the offensive line. You know, they have some young players there. They have some guys that have been banged up in the past and are still banged up. The Brian Storks of the world, and a lot of young guys, like I said, Shaq Mason, Josh Klein, Trey Jackson, and David Andrews is a younger guy as well. So a lot of young guys playing quality snaps for them along the offensive line. You can attack them if you try, and you just have to win those one-on-one matchups. Tom Brady's so good at understanding, hey, look, I'm going to be feeling heat here. The ball's got to come out quickly. He's so good at maneuvering inside the pocket and operating with whatever little space that he has, making the most of it and being able to deliver the football accurately. So you really have to be sound in the way that you attack the quarterback. And then also you got to be able to cover well on the back end. If he has just a little sliver of space to be able to deliver the ball, he's going to get rid of it. So you have to be sound.
Let's change sides here and talk about the Patriots defense for a second. Obviously, the Eagles are going to look to get their running game back in line. Really haven't gotten it going in the last few games. So as they try to get it back in line against the Patriots, that New England defensive front, it seems like they have so many guys that they just interchange in and out. How's that matchup? How's that play out?
You know, it's interesting. And you go and we say it with the offense and how there's so many interchangeable parts and how, you know, one week they can do one thing and then the next week it's completely different. It's very similar on the defensive side of the ball. You know, you look at this front seven, and they all play any combination of these guys along the front and move them all over the formation, attacking from different angles. You know, Rob Ninkovich on the outside. Chandler Jones is big and he's versatile. The rookie first round pick Malcolm Brown had probably his best game of the season Sunday night against Denver. Was very, very disruptive. Dominique Easley is very disruptive as well. Another former first round pick. Akeem Hicks they got from New Orleans. Geno Grissom they drafted out of Oklahoma. He's been very effective. Jabal Sheard they got from Cleveland. Another former second round pick who, you know, didn't really pan out completely in Cleveland, has been very disruptive for them in the run game, for New England. And then you look at the linebacker level. They've got a bunch of guys that are athletic. They're really good tacklers. You know, they may miss Dante Hightower this week, but Jonathan Freeney is really explosive when he plays sideline to sideline. Jamie Collins is one of the freakiest athletes at the linebacker position in the entire NFL. And obviously that's not even talking about Gerard Mayo, the middle linebacker, who is an absolute stud as well. So you look at this front seven, they interchange these parts up and down in so many different looks, so many different formations. You may see a 4-3 over front one look, and then the very next play it might be a 3-4 under. I mean, they just have so many different personnel groupings and different formations, so many different looks. They have a lot of different exotic blitz packages as well. And then in the secondary, you look, and sometimes they play a lot of nickel, they play a lot of dime, mm-hmm. With 5 DBs, 6 DBs. Sometimes they'll play 7 DBs and a dollar defense and all those different combinations of guys that can play corner and safety. It's impossible to try and even chart it because you're looking at it and you're trying to watch and you're saying, okay, Patrick Chung was in the slot on this play. Now he's playing free safety. But then they moved Malcolm Butler. He was at left corner. Now he's in the slot. And Logan Ryan was at right corner. Now he's at left corner. I mean, they do so many different things to just try and mix things up in the secondary. It's a really, really fun group to watch.
Fran, if anybody can chart it, it would be you. I have confidence in you.
Thank you.
Fran, great stuff as always. If you guys want to see more from Fran, be sure to check out his Eagle Eye in the Sky columns on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And now we'll transition into game time.
Get out your scorecards. It's game time.
All right, gentlemen. The name of today's game is Standing Pat. I have 6 trivia questions for each one of you.
6 for each.
6 for each of you guys.
Oh boy.
And we know that none of them are Pat Benatar.
Correct. Pat Benatar would have been the 13th question. Ah. I can only do 12. So Pat Benatar was the last person to get cut.
First one out.
Player 54 on the roster. Had to get down to 53. So they'll start out a little bit easy just to get you guys kind of warmed up. And then, the tough stuff is coming afterwards. So we'll start off with C-Mac.
Lovely.
C-Mac, this Pat is a proud father of his son, who has started 5 games at quarterback for the Vanderbilt Commodores this season.
Oh, offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur.
Correct. C-Mac is on the board.
Pat on the back there, C-Mac.
Thank you.
That was the alternate name for this segment.
It's not bad.
Pat on the back, but I went with standing.
So Kyle has started 5 games for the Commodores.
He has. Fran, next up, your first question. This current Pat was once an Eagle, but before that, he was a Pat. This current Pat is a former Eagle, but before that, he was a Pat.
That would be Pat Chung.
Patrick Chung is correct.
It's gone!
Oh, a little bit over the top there.
Oh,
good.
C-Mac, number 2 for you.
Okay.
This Downingtown, PA native played his college ball locally and has spent parts of five seasons in the NFL with four different teams.
Pat Devlin.
That is correct.
Oh, good one. Good one.
C-Mac is 2-for-2. Fran, back to you. This baseball Hall of Famer put the finishing touches on the 2008 World Series Phillies team.
Oh, that would be Pat Gillick.
Pat Gillick is correct. You are each 2-for-2.
Brilliant.
Nice job with the beginning of this segment. C-Mac, you're up.
Okay.
C-Mac, this man was originally hired by the Sixers as a trainer with the task of helping the 7'6" Sean Bradley bulk up.
Pat Croce.
Pat Croce is correct.
Excellent.
Basically created NovaCare or was instrumental in making NovaCare what it is today.
He was a trainer who went on to, you know, have these incredible, rehab and obviously NovaCare. Yeah, and then he was the president of the Sixers for the run to the NBA Finals back in 2001. Fran, next up. This two-time World Series champion was the first overall pick in the 1998 MLB draft out of the U.
That would be one Pat the Bat Burrell.
Pat the Bat Burrell is absolutely correct. C-Mac, back to you for question number 4.
Okay.
This person is the all-time winningest coach in NCAA basketball history and has won, count them, 8 NCAA Division I national championships.
You got to go to the summit, Pat Summit.
Absolutely correct.
That's a good one.
C-Mac is 4-for-4. Fran, back to you. I'm getting worried that these were a little too easy, but Fran, this
Pat. If you had Pat Benatar, I would have lost, so.
Well, not if Fran would have got the question because he seemed like he really wanted Pat Benatar there. Fran, this Pat, whose legal first name is actually George, kicked the game-winning field goal against the Cleveland Browns in the swirling winds and snow of Yankee Stadium to send the Giants to the playoffs.
Oh, it's Pat Summerall.
Pat Summerall is correct.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
It's gone!
Thank you.
You guys are each 4-for-4 here. C-Mac.
This is a good Jeopardy category, by the way.
C-Mac, this TV personality once took a spin as a weatherman and was even a military DJ in Vietnam for the Armed Forces Network.
Never knew that about Pat Sajak.
Pat Sajak is absolutely correct. C-Mac, 5-for-5. Fran.
Excellent.
The 44th overall pick in 2009, this former Heisman finalist never completed a pass in the NFL.
That would be the who the Miami Dolphins were hoping would be the new version of the Wildcat. That would be Pat White from West Virginia University.
Pat White is very absolutely nice. Correct. 5-for-5. Down to one each, and I think you guys might go undefeated here. You guys have done very well with this. C-Mac,
yeah.
This 7-time Pro Bowler was also an All-Pro selection in 5 of his 8 NFL seasons.
Ooh, let's see.
This 7-time Pro Bowler was also an All-Pro selection in 5 of his 8 NFL seasons.
I'm going to go Patrick Willis.
That is correct. C-Mac has aced the test. C-Mac goes 6-for-6, so he knows his Pats. Fran, it's up to you.
This is make or break. Huge.
This actor, most known for his role as Captain Jean-Luc Picard, was knighted on New Year's Eve of 2010. Hands are over his head right now. I'll give a play-by-play, Fran. Would you like me to read the question again?
Yes, please do.
This actor, most known for his role as Captain Jean-Luc Picard, was knighted on New Year's Eve of 2010.
Oh my gosh. This is embarrassing. I am having an unbelievable brain fart right now. There's probably a sounder for that.
I think we left that one off the list this week. I'm going to have to start a shot clock.
I know. This is brutal.
I could see his picture, but...
I know, and I'm thinking of the meme. This is unbelievable.
Do you know what show Captain Jean-Luc Picard is from?
Of course, Star Trek Generation.
Correct. You know his first name.
Yes.
I'm going to give you a 5-second countdown.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
5.
Is his first name Pat?
4, yes. 3.
I'm going to lose.
2.
And I don't even want to know the answer. Don't even tell me. We're going to end the segment.
Can we get the buzzer? Can we get the buzzer?
We're going
to end the
segment without
knowing. I'm going to tell you this because you need to know this.
I'm going
to
pound the table.
You need to know this one. That would be Sir Patrick Stewart.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
No good. He missed it.
Unbelievable.
I really thought you were going to get
ridicule
that.
Go me good. On Twitter, please.
He missed it.
Unbelievable. Sir Patrick Stewart. He's
unbelievable.
But overall, a really good showing from you guys. Nicely done, gentlemen. C-Mac comes away victorious.
God.
It's going to seem like I slipped you a 20 before coming down here. Definitely Fran had the tougher ones. I would not have gotten Summerall either.
Oh, I thought that was a pretty easy one. I thought Pat Sajak might have tripped you up, but... nice job to get that one. I thought Pat White and Mave tripped Fran up, but no NFL draft questions.
I was going to say, come on now.
Poor planning on your part.
But C-Mac comes away victorious 6-5. So a pat on the back for C-Mac. Nicely done. Good job today, guys. And we will transition into our final segment here, mailing it in.
Captain, incoming message.
Please check your mailbox. A new message has arrived.
And now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in our segment, Mailing It In.
We hear worse voice in every single podcast, and I couldn't remember Patrick Stewart's last name. Embarrassing. He was in The Sounder.
When he says captain in the incoming message, he's talking to Patrick Stewart.
He's talking to Patrick Stewart.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I am so embarrassed.
You're getting mocked by your own podcast here. The drops in the podcast are laughing at you.
Teasing you, tantalizing you, knowing.
Patrick Stewart.
Should have had him. All right, so send out the question just before Chip Kelly's press conference around 1 p.m. And understanding the temperature of the fan base at the moment, you know, I could have guessed what 9 out of 10 responses would have been. But we got a few good ones. Actually, a couple of ones that were actually quite good. So, gentlemen, for this first one on Mailing It In, the first one comes from @Choates1991. Charlie wants to know, what's going on with DeMarco Murray? And will Ryan Matthews be back next week? The easy question, or the easy answer at least, is with Ryan Matthews, I don't know. Chip Kelly said that on Monday he still hasn't been cleared. And there have been players who have suffered concussions after and have come back. So it's scary. It's absolutely scary.
I'm not trying to bring up something, but Malcolm played through a game with a concussion and played the following week. Now, I know the protocols and stuff are different, but...
But Bradford's been cleared. Ertz is on track to be cleared.
But didn't Chip say also that he hadn't gone through it yet this week? I mean, he could come this week and get cleared, right?
Yeah, he made it sound like he wasn't close.
Really?
Yeah, so maybe by the time you listen to this on Wednesday, maybe he'll be back on the field. With DeMarco, it's been a product of poor offensive line play, of trying to work him into the scheme and adjusting to his skill set. I mean, best answer, it seemed like they were getting into a rhythm when both he and Matthews were complimenting each other on the field. But where you miss Matthews is on the sweeps, the outside runs, that he can get to the edge quicker. You know, Murray's a guy who needs to get going downhill. He's more of a finisher than Matthews, but he needs to get going downhill sooner.
Talking about those outside runs, I didn't watch the whole game, but I caught a lot of the ending of the Patriots-Broncos game from last night. C.J. Anderson had a really nice night against the Pats defense last night, and a lot of his big runs were on those sweep outside plays. That's what the game-winning play was in overtime, where they got him outside. You know, they had the tackle and the tight end pulling out to that side too as well. So I think Ryan Matthews obviously would be a huge asset for the Eagles to get back in this game, because I think that's a way that you can attack that Pats defense. But, you know, just getting back to DeMarco Murray, I almost wonder with a guy like him if, you know, maybe he's a little bit more banged up than he might let on. Obviously, you know, new to a team, he just got, you know, a contract, that kind of thing. If maybe he's trying to just, you know, tough it out and play through, because obviously at this point in the season, I don't think anybody is 100% healthy. But, you know, just trying to play through it and play tough and that kind of thing. But it also goes back to what you said, C-Mac, about, you know, offensive line play has been up and down, trying to fit into the scheme. And just the whole offense overall, just aside from a few games early in the season, just hasn't been able to really click together.
All right, next question comes from @EaglesTroll, a good friend on Twitter, who I still have to get something in the mail. I've not forgotten about that one. Eagles Troll wants to know, what does the return of Jalen Watkins, Fran Duffy favorite, mean for the secondary pecking order when it comes to Biggers, Rowe, and Rice? I mean, the biggest thing to me is Rowe is going to be your starting corner opposite of Byron Maxwell.
Right.
You just need another experienced guy in there. Watkins, fourth-round pick, a guy they liked, just didn't make it with the team through training camp. It was with Buffalo, was with his brother Sammy throughout the course of the season.
Maybe. Yeah, and I think that really what it comes down to, it'll be interesting to see, is on Sunday, is Jalen Watkins active over Denzel Rice? And then you know, okay, this is the reason why. They want to stash Denzel Rice. They don't want him to get scooped up anywhere else. Got to keep him on the active roster. He's inactive. And you bring in Jalen Watkins because you feel more comfortable about him playing immediately. Or it could go the other way. And we could see Denzel Rice on Sunday. So we'll get more of an answer on that. But the good thing about Jalen Watkins is we know. He can play inside, he can play outside, and he can play safety. So when you have a guy that's got that kind of positional versatility in this defense, he brings some value.
It'll be interesting to see how he's progressed throughout the course of the season during his time as Buffalo. He had a great opportunity to, you know, win the nickel job in training camp after Ja'Cory Shepherd got hurt, was not able to seize the opportunity, and didn't make the final 53. As Fran mentioned, they went with Denzel Rice, a guy who I think you can agree they wouldn't have been able to keep on a practice squad. So
yeah, I think that certainly is the reasoning behind it. So now we'll get to see. I'm interested to watch him over the next few weeks.
All right, last one here comes from Aaron Kennedy, not our good friend AK who works for the 49ers, but no, different yeah. Aaron Kennedy. Schematic question here. Wants to know, does Chip plan on implementing formations with the quarterback under center using a fullback or a dual halfback backfield, less shotgun moving forward?
The good thing is, Aaron, AK, if I may, AK, that they have been mixing in some of those formations. We've seen over the past few weeks that Trey Burton was in the backfield as a fullback a couple times this past week against Detroit. We've seen it a few times with Zach Ertz in the past as well. I think that they've tried to mix some different things in as they're trying to get the run game back on track. Now, we'll see how much if they try and use it a little bit more, but we've definitely seen more of it over the past few weeks, both under center and with a quote-unquote fullback, whether, obviously it's one of our backup tight ends, but we've seen it with Ertz and then last week as well with Trey Burton.
Yeah, I think you might see more of it, but the foundations of this offense are built around the shotgun. So I think you'll see more of it. I don't think you'll see it every play or every other play, but you'll see more of it.
All right. So great stuff from you guys out there. Even the ones who are asking, where's Chip Kelly going to be at the end of the season?
Which we know the answer to that question.
Exactly. Right here in Philadelphia.
Right here in Philly.
So that's going to do it for us here on the Eagles Insider Podcast. Again, if you haven't already subscribed, please do so wherever you consume podcasts. Make sure to like and comment. Let us know what you want to hear on future editions of the podcast. Hopefully, we're going strong through the month of December and into the new year, to say the very least.
I would hope so.
So, for the gentlemen behind the scenes, Chris Stevens and Brian Thomas.
Excellent job today, guys.
For my co-host,
excellent.
Fran Duffy and Alex Smith, I'm Chris McPherson. Thank you very much. You have been listening to the Eagles Insider Podcast.